So if you don't know, that song was Back in Black by AC/DC, an iconic rock song of the 1980s. That song is one of theirs that shines above so many other great songs. Any AC/DC fans in the house? 80s fans? See, they're loud, too. It's terrific. You were born in the right generation, right? Woo! Yeah! Right away. That's terrific, man. And AC/DC, that song was the title track off of their album released in 1980, same name, Back in Black. That album is one of the best-selling albums of all time, believe it or not. That album is number 4 of all albums ever sold. Still to this day, record sales of that album are as good as a lot of new music that's coming out. People still consistently buy that so much. This crowd over here, you probably can't even see me, can you? Can't even see me. There's a terrific haze going on in here right now. This is week 2 of Let There Be Rock, and this series, what we're doing is we're taking these iconic rock songs from each generation. Last week in the 70s, we got to take a look at Simple Man. Anybody enjoy that? Yeah? I did. I thought it was a pretty good time. This week, of course, we get to look at AC/DC. Next week, we'll be looking at the 90s, and I can tell you, you do not want to miss next week. Next week is going to be awesome. And if you're a 90s person, you're especially going to be like, yes, as you sit there in the audience. It's going to be good. But the idea of this series is that these songs, they're bigger than just music to fill our speaker box. A lot of times, music is something that we use to communicate how we feel. Music is what keeps us going at times. Sometimes music is what scores our life. It gives us the strength to get through hard times, or maybe it gives us the energy to accomplish something. Music is a very, very powerful tool. And that's why we're looking at this and looking at these iconic songs and looking deeper into them, because a lot of times there's a lot of depth underneath of these songs. This one, of course, is just one of those, crazy, iconic rock songs. It is fast, it is loud, man, there is shredding guitars, there is this, it's not even really singing, it's just screaming lyrics at rhythm, that's what it is. Poor Nick, he's like, his throat is going to be just gone. During practice, he's just like, it's just raw. But I mean, the lyrics are very, very simple. It literally, the phrase, I'm back, is in this song 30 times. Okay? That's how simple it is. A lot of the same thing repeated over and over again. And when we actually go to the verses, we get very, very simple rhythmic words, but it speaks of this rock and roll lifestyle. So the first verse, you have lyrics with you. If you got them on your thing, you can look at these, or you can follow along with me as well. But the first verse, really, it says this. It says, back in black, I hit the sack. I've been too long, and I'm glad to be back. Yes, I am. Let loose from the noose that's kept me hanging about. I keep looking at the sky because it's getting me high. Forget the hearse because I'll never die. I got 9 lives, cat's eyes, using every one of them and running wild. Man, that kind of represents that rock and roll atmosphere, doesn't it? I mean, I'm never going to die, man. I'm just bigger than life. I got 9 lives and I'm going to use every one of them to live this crazy, crazy life. Verse 2, if we jump down, this is what verse 2 says. Back in the back of a Cadillac, number 1 with a bullet, I'm a power pack. Yes, I am in a bang with a gang. They got to catch me if they want me to hang. Because I'm back on the track and I'm beating the flag. Nobody's going to get me on another rap. So look at me now, I'm just making my play. Don't try to push your luck, just get out of my way. And this one really speaks to kind of just that bad boy sense of rock and roll, doesn't it? Basically, what he's alluding to is the fact that, like, he's like, you know what, don't get in my way. I'm going to keep running this thing. Anyone who talks about, like, basically trying to get me on something because I did something wrong, you're going to have to catch me if you want me to be in trouble. I mean, it's this really, like, bad boy feel to it. And that's so much of this song and so much of these rock songs that were sung, especially in the 80s. A lot of this really kind of came out of this generation of, like, the bigger than life. Like, I'm never going to die. I'm going to break the rules. I don't care. And this whole, like, sex, drugs, and rock and roll scene became a true reality. And I think it just kind of exploded even more in the 80s as stuff got even more accessible. You read all this different stuff about all these bands, and I mean, all of them had issues with cocaine, and all of them had issues with using a ton of drugs, a lot of different promiscuity in relationship to this. The lead singer, at not the time of this song, but before this, Bon Scott, he actually was just released, his manager is writing a book on it, and he said that at one time, Bon literally visited 2 girls who had his kids in the same time in a hospital. They didn't know each other, and he was married to neither of them. That's the kind of lifestyle this guy lived, okay? Very, very sex, drugs, rock and roll type thing. And this song can seem like an anthem to that, that it's just, man, it's just another one of those songs. But if you go back and you understand where this song comes from, that's where we get some of the context that I want to speak to you about today. So the band AC/DC was formed by two brothers, Angus and Malcolm Young. And as they kind of went forward, they kept trying to find different frontmen to lead their band. And finally, in 1974, they happened upon a really great frontman. His name was Bon Scott. And when they found this guy, I mean, he was just terrific. He had this great voice, and he had this amazing personality. Still on rock countdown lists, they usually list him within the top five frontmen of all time. He was one of those people who could grab a crowd and pull them on stage. And they said he was like this unifying agent that came into the band, and all of a sudden, the band just really hit their stride. I mean, stuff started blowing up. Their songs went through the roof. A lot of these songs that Bond sung, you're going to know, okay? It's A Long Way to the Top. Anybody? Great song, right? Dirty Deeds Done Dirt Cheap, Highway to Hell, Let There Be Rock. Do you remember? That's actually where we got this title for a thing. That was a song of theirs that was terrific. The band was on a major rise, and it was getting more and more popular across the globe. It was getting popular in the United States of America for the first time because they're an Australian band, and that's where they primarily were popular, and they started getting popular elsewhere. And they were just getting ready to record another album when tragedy struck. On February 19th, 1980, Bon Scott, their lead singer, was found dead in a friend's car. They had gone out partying the night before, went out drinking, having a good time, and when his friend came back to take him home, he was passed out in the car, had drank way too much. And he knocked on the door and asked his girlfriend at the time, what should I do with him? And she said, he just always passes out after drinking too much, just let him sleep it off. So he left him in the car, leaned back the seat, and went to bed. The next day he came out and Bon was dead. Took him to the hospital. Doctors diagnosed him saying that he had acute alcohol poisoning, but what they considered it was death by misadventure. It basically means an accidental death of sorts. Most people actually believe that what happened to Bon was he just simply how he leaned back in the chair, basically that Bon in the middle of the night puked and suffocated on his own vomit. And that's where he died, in his friend's car. The band was, of course, shattered at this time. All of them thought maybe we shouldn't go on after this, but after discussing with the family and just considering what they thought Bon would want, they decided that they were going to go forward with it anyway. And Bon had actually spoke of this other guy, Brian Johnson, that he had seen in a band named Geordie, and he said, this guy is crazy. He's everything that rock and roll is. And they contacted Brian, and he came, and he became their frontman. So after he became their frontman, they said, we need to write a song that's a tribute to Bon Scott. We have these awesome licks, man, this really good guitar, but Brian, we want you to write the lyrics as a tribute to Bon Scott. This is what he said. Bon in an interview says, they said to me, it can't be morbid. It has to be for Bon, and it has to be a celebration. And he added, well, I thought, well, there's no pressure there then, right? He says, I just wrote what came into my head, which at the time seemed like mumbo jumbo. Nine lives, cat's eyes, abusing every one of them and running wild. The boys got it, though. They saw Bond's life in that lyric. Now, I don't want to pick on a man who's departed from this earth, but when Brian set out to write something that captured the essence of Bon Scott, the interesting thing is the song references the very foolishness that ended his life. In a means to give this guy a celebration, interestingly enough, the song revolves around this, I don't care about what's going on, I'm a bad boy, I break the rules, you know what, I'm indestructible, I got nine lives. But it was being sung as a tribute to a man who had choked on his own vomit in a car because he had drank too much. And it's kind of interesting because it's almost propping up the very foolishness that ended his life as a celebration of this man. Now, I like the song. The song is a fun song to listen to. But see, then when you go back and listen to it all of a sudden, it kind of sounds different in your head. Because it's not just a fun rock and roll song. You realize this is supposed to be a tribute to a man who died. And the stuff they're saying is the very reason why he died. This is what was remembered about Bon, man. He was crazy. He was a partier. He had a good time. I understand that celebration, but it can seem kind of like foolishness, isn't it? It's like people who go to graves of people who die in drunk driving accidents, and they bring them a beer.
You're celebrating the issue that ended their life instead of their life itself. And I think maybe we can kind of have our eyes, man, on the wrong focus. But what this song brought to mind when I looked through it, I looked at the lyrics, and you realize what the song is about. The question that I wanted to bring to you guys this morning is this: what will you be remembered for? What will you be remembered for? For Bon, it was this song that represented his life. But what are you going to be remembered for someday? It says in Psalm 90:10, psalms were songs, basically, a lot of times songs of wisdom. This is what it says in Psalm 90:10. 70 years are given to us, some even live to 80, but even the best years are filled with pain and trouble. Soon they disappear and we fly away. This is the truth of life. Each of us, no matter how young you are today or how old you are, every one of us have an appointment with death. Every one of us have an appointment already set up in the books for when we get to meet death. And you can move that date closer to you. There's a lot of things you can do to move that date up closer, but you can't put it off. Very little can be done to prolong it. You can do some smart choices, you can make some smart things, but realistically, I think what you're just doing is you're getting back to the initial date. We're all working back. We're all scooting the date closer and closer and closer to us by all of our decisions. We have a date that's set in time that we have to meet with death, and there's nothing we can do. There's no way to skip the appointment. There's no way to cancel it. There's no way to get around it. It's going to come someday. Felix Adler, a Jewish professor in the 1900s and a very wise man, says this: the bitter yet merciful lesson which death teaches us is to distinguish the gold from the tinsel, the true values from the worthless chaff. The terrible events of life are great eye-openers. They force us to learn that which it is wholesome for us to know, but which habitually we try to ignore, namely, that really we have no claim to a long life, that we each of us are liable to be carried off at any moment, and that the main point is not how long we live, but with what meaning we fill that short allotted span, for short it is at best. It's a wise statement. It talks about how all of us are coming to a day, and we try to forget about it, we try to put it off, we try to ignore it. And he says, really, when it all comes down to it, you have a short period of time, and the most important thing isn't how long you live, it's the life you put inside of that time that you're given. James 4:14, James, the brother of Jesus speaking, says this: how do you know what your life will be like tomorrow? Your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, and then it's gone. Another translation, the term they use is actually miss, and if you'll excuse me for a second, I want to show you this. They say your life is like a mist. And I tried to think how I could describe this, and I thought Windex. Perfect, right? It says it's a mist. Let me show you what it is, okay? Gone. He says your life is like a mist. It's like when you go outside and you breathe for a second and then it just disappears. It's just up and disappeared, and no one ever knows that was ever there again. That fast. Here and gone. James says that's all that life is. He says it's just a brief moment that you get on this earth. You just get a few short years, and all of a sudden, it's the end, and it's over. Can anybody, and I think what we'll limit this to, is say somebody who's maybe like 50 years or older, can anybody attest that you sometimes stop and think, where did the years go? Anybody? Where did the years go? You look back and you go, you know, all of a sudden, I'm old. I was in grade school like yesterday. I was a kid. All of a sudden, my kids are growing up. My kids are getting married. My mom will comment about that all the time. She'll say, how in the world do I have a 30 and 27-year-old? She just feels like yesterday that you were just little kids running around our house. So he's saying, it's just a mist, and gone. All of a sudden, life is over. So the question is, not how long you live, but what you do inside of that. And the question is this: what will you be remembered for? Because the mist is going to disappear, and that's it. You're done. What's going to be left behind? What are people going to say about you after you depart this world? People say, well, Cameron, I mean, isn't this kind of morbid to be talking about death and creepy and weird? I don't really like this. You remember last week we talked about Solomon when I was talking about the simple man? Anyone remember Solomon, right? Remember, piles on piles, not stacks on stacks. Remember? Everything. Super, super wise man. In Ecclesiastes 7:4, this extremely wise man says this: a wise person thinks a lot about death, while a fool thinks only about having a good time. Solomon, the most wise man on earth, he says, no, people will be like, oh, don't talk about that death. It's creepy. He says, no, wise people actually think about their death. He says, they think about the fact that their life will end someday, and they walk backwards from that. He says, the fools, what they do is just always say, let's just have a drink. Let's just have a good time. Let's not talk about death. We don't want to talk about that. Let's just have a good time. He says, those are the fools. He says, the wise people, they actually think about their death on a regular basis. They think about it. So what I'm doing today is I'm helping move you from foolishness to wisdom as we take a few minutes and think about it. This is why it's important to use the analogy of a book that represents your entire life. You get to write every chapter except for the last one. You get to decide what's in every chapter except for the last one. And the last chapter is reserved for those who come after you who remember you. The last chapter of your life is after you're gone, those who are around you pen the last words that say, this person was like this. The last chapter of your life is going to be written by somebody else. It might be your kids, it might be your friends, your family, your church, people who you've connected with, people who you've run into in life, people you've done business with. They're going to all come together to write that last chapter of your life. And that's how the book ends. That's the last word on your life. Let me show you two examples of this in the Bible. Two times where we get to read the last chapter. Somebody else wrote all the chapters coming up to it, and what the Bible records is really the last chapter. This is after everything has happened. This is how people remember this person. We want to look at two stories, and to make them really, really clear, I'm going to look at two stories that are almost side by side in the Bible, featuring some of the exact same characters, one of which is going to be Paul. Paul is the main character of a lot of the New Testament. This man did a ton in regards to the church. And he was out and he was preaching the gospel, spreading the good news. And I want to take a look at two people whom Paul interacted with, almost the exact same way, who responded in different ways. And let's look at how they're remembered, how the last chapter of their life is written. First, Acts 16:12-15. It says this: from there we reached Philippi, a major city of that district of Macedonia and a Roman colony. And we stayed there for several days. This is Paul talking. And on the Sabbath we went a little way outside of the city to a riverbank, where we thought people would be meeting for prayer. And we sat down to speak with some women who had gathered there. One of them was Lydia from Thyatira, a merchant of expensive purple cloth who worshipped God. As she listened to us, the Lord opened her heart, and she accepted what Paul was saying. She was baptized along with other members of her household, and she asked us to be her guest. If you agree that I am a true believer in the Lord, she said, come and stay at my home. And she urged us until we agreed. It actually says that they go back and they stay at her home again. Lydia was one of the founding members of the church of Philippi, one of the very first people. And the last chapter of her life states that she heard, she changed, and past that, down through generations, people have looked at her as a symbol of understanding it, of getting it, of sainthood. The Catholic Church has a feast day for her on May 20th. The Lutheran and Episcopal Church both celebrate feast days for her. The Orthodox Church considers her a saint. There is a church located in Philippi that is said to have been built in her honor. And on the site, tradition states that she was baptized. There is a modern-day baptismal that people go to be baptized in the same waters, the same pool symbolically, as Lydia, who helped push forward the gospel in this area. In the last chapter of her life after this, people have talked about the greatness of this woman. Still, thousands of years later, we read of it. And I share it with you. That news is still continuing on. Wow, what a faithful woman. We're going to go four chapters forward to Acts 20. And in Acts 20:7-12, This is Paul speaking in another time. It says, on the first day of the week, we gathered with the local believers to share in the Lord's Supper. Paul was preaching to them, and since he was leaving the next day, he kept talking until midnight. The upstairs room where we met was lighted by many flickering lamps, and as Paul spoke on and on, a young man named Eutychus, sitting on the windowsill, became very drowsy. Finally, he fell sound asleep and dropped three stories to his death below. Paul went down, bent over him, and took him into his arms. "Don't worry," he said, "he's alive." Then they all went back upstairs, shared in the Lord's Supper, and ate together. Paul continued talking to them until dawn, and then he left. Meanwhile, the young man was taken home unhurt, and everyone was greatly relieved. Eutychus heard the news and fell asleep and plummeted to his death. Interestingly enough, there is no church dedicated to his honor. Interestingly enough, there is no baptismal to his honor. Interestingly enough, there is no feast days in his honor. Interestingly enough, he has not been sainted in any churches. Two people who wrote the chapters of their life and really experienced the exact same thing with Paul, but the final chapter was written by people who came after them. And Lydia was remembered as a saint, and Eutychus as a sleepyhead who fell out of a window. What do you want to be remembered for? What will you be remembered for? Have you noticed, does anyone right now, here, real quick poll, who knows, is related to, has a friend, or has a friend who knows somebody named Lydia? Okay, now keep your hands up if you know somebody named Eutychus. People are still being named Lydia in honor of this woman. I don't know if I've ever met someone named Eutychus. Not somebody people said, we want you to be like this guy named Eutychus. Fell asleep, fought and got killed, and they had to bring him back to life. Cool, it's a cool story, but you don't really want to be remembered as that guy, do you? What will you be remembered for? You get to write every chapter of your life but the last. And there is some of you, man, you are Eutychusing this whole thing. You're sleeping through it. There's some of you right now that I just woke you up because I yelled louder. You're in this service Eutychusing it. You're not even listening right now. That just caught your attention. He's yelling all of a sudden. Wait, hold on, what? Huh? Are you going to be a Eutychus with your faith? Are you going to be a Eutychus with your life? Are you just going to sleep through everything? And what people are going to remember is, he fell out of a window once. Are you a Lydia who grabs a hold of what's given to her and becomes somebody that people look up to and say, man, to be like Lydia, she's the one who helped move forward the church. She took and brought people into her house and she served them. So many of you guys in your faith, this is the reality. There are a whole bunch of people across the world, even in our church, who your faith is, man, it looks like Eutychus. It's asleep. It is tired and sleepy. At best, or at worst, it's going to fall out of a window and be dead. What do you want to be remembered for? What will you be remembered for? Is something like that going to be what you're known for when your kids talk about you? Some dumb story of your misadventure? Or is it going to be about how faithful you were? How good of a man or good of a woman you were? How loving you were? What are people going to say about you? I've heard stories of pastors being asked to do funerals and getting together a few of the friends to ask, what were they like? And the family has almost nothing to say. Hey, he liked football. That's good. Anything else? He liked his chair. He always was sitting in this chair. It's great. It's not enough to fill this funeral service. He liked the chair and he liked football. Congratulations. What will you be remembered for? Will it be folly? Or will it be faith? If you're a believer, somebody who claims that you have Jesus, are you living your faith on purpose? Are you living your life on purpose? In this song, I think an application for you would be this. It says, because I'm back on track and I'm beating the flack. Nobody's going to get me on another rap. So look at me now, I'm just making my play. Don't try to push your luck. Just get out of my way. Maybe the reality is you need to get on track. The reality is that you need to actually get your life on track, your faith on track, your family on track. That you actually need to decide what you're going to do and stop worrying about what other people think about it. Stop worrying about how they're going to respond to it. Stop worrying about how they're going to interpret it. And instead say, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to be the person who I'm supposed to be. There are so many people who are going to inadvertently walk through all the chapters of their life, not thinking about what they're writing, and they're going to come to the second to last chapter and try to do all the fixing in that one chapter. You see it in people's lives all the time. All of a sudden, they realize that back cover of the book is coming in their life. And then all of a sudden, in the second to last chapter of their life, they try to do all the great stuff they never did. They try to microwave all these relationships all of a sudden. Yeah, I know I never said anything, I never took care, I never did. We're just trying to put it in the microwave and get it warmed back up. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work. Try to microwave the relationships with the kids, microwave the relationships with their parents, microwave the relationships with their wife or with their spouse. All these different things. My faith. All of a sudden, they come back and try to do this and get it going. But you have chapter after chapter after chapter telling a different story before it. Anybody who reads through your life, when they actually write that last chapter, that second to last one's going to barely be a blip. And they're going to say, it looked like this. What will you be remembered for? Life is a mess. Just gone. What are people going to say about you? How are your kids going to remember you? Because the reality is, what you need to do is just what Solomon said. He says, the wise think about death. The wise realize a back cover is coming, a last chapter is coming, and what they say is, I'm going to live my life in preparation for that. Instead of just walking through this life accidentally, I know that someday people are going to write about me and say, well, how will I be remembered? So today, I need to start writing these chapters different. Today, I need to change the way I deal with my faith. I'm not just going to sit in service and just listen to a message, then go on and live like hell the rest of the week. I'm going to actually do something with my faith. Because we're sitting here, and there's people who've done it, because I've done it, and you're sitting here right now, and you say you believe in Jesus to save your soul, but you don't trust him enough to even live your daily life in accordance with his calling in your life. Yeah, when I die, Jesus is going to take my eternal soul and put it in heaven, but I don't want Jesus getting a hold of my morality because I like what I do that's sinful too much. I don't want Jesus getting a hold of my money because I like where I spend it too much. I don't want Jesus getting a hold of my time because I like my relaxation too much. Are any of us fooling ourselves thinking that that half-hearted faith is actually going to get us into heaven someday? I mean, do any of you really think? I mean, like, you talk to people about the whole thing, how do you get there? And people think, well, you got to do more good than bad, more good than bad, right? Does anyone think that 50% gets you to pass any grade? Where does 51% ever count for anything? Nowhere. It wouldn't get you past first grade. Man, you got to be up in the 70s, 80s, don't you? Here in relationship, too, I don't know about you guys, but 51% doesn't cut it. My wife is faithful to me 51% of the time. That's 49% too much, right? It's funny, but it's true, right? It's 100% of the time. No. When I said I loved you and I wanted to be with you, I didn't mean, as long as 51% of the time you like me, 51% of the time you're faithful to me. No, it was 100%. I expect 100% of the time that you're faithful to me. How can any of us fool ourselves thinking that 51% is going to get us into heaven? It's not. It's not. It's 100% of our lives meeting Jesus. 100% of our lives being accessible by Jesus. People say, so are you saying, Cameron, I need to have it all figured out? I need to have every detail figured out? Nope, absolutely not. That's where Christ's grace comes in. But I will tell you this, if you're taking your life and you're stiff-arming Jesus away from it, I highly, highly doubt that he's actually going to get a hold of your heart. Jesus, don't touch this. Don't touch this. It's not going to work. So many of you are Christians and you say, I believe in Jesus. Do something about it. Do something about it. There is a whole lot to be done. I wonder, God, what your will is for my life. Could you just, what's the will for my life? It makes me sick listening to Christians talk like that. There's specific will that God will give you, but let me tell you, there is general will that's worth dying for today. The general will of Jesus came and traded his life for yours so that you can live, man, an abundant life so that people around you can meet Jesus and have their eternities changed as well. That general calling is more than enough for the rest of our life. Whether God never gives us any special calling, any specific calling, which I'm sure he still will, if that never came through, the general calling of us as Christians who have been saved by grace is enough to say, I'm sold out 100% for the rest of my life. What do you want to be remembered as? You went to church on Sunday? She sometimes cared about Jesus. He was a rock. She was a pillar in the church. Everything was about Jesus. I'll tell you, the more I walk through my faith, I realize what I want people to say about me when I die, more than anything else, is the people to say, that man, he loved Jesus. I want that at the end of my life, when my name comes up in conversations, people would say, Cameron, man, that guy loved Jesus. I mean, he was just all about Jesus. Whatever it took to make Jesus famous, whatever it took to tell people about Jesus, that's what I want my life to be remembered as. Not all the silly, stupid stuff. Man, he loved Jesus. What do you want to be remembered as? Part in your faith, part in just your life. There's so many of us, man, moms and dads, what do you want to be remembered as a parent? I mean, do you just want to be remembered as there? Yeah, dad was there, mom was there. Or do you want to be remembered as somebody who really cared? They went out of their way to care for me at times that were hard for them. They were always there for me. They were accepting, even when sometimes I did dumb stuff that was totally off the page. Man, they still sat down and they encouraged me and they believed in me. It's not going to happen on accident. You're not going to accidentally walk through these pages and all of a sudden that last chapter is going to be terrific. You have to start writing each page intentionally, building towards that end goal. The wise, they think about that end day. The fools, let's just have a good time. If you're a pre-Christian, somebody who's never met Jesus, somebody who's never taken the step to start a relationship with Jesus, I think that your application is this in the song. It says, let loose from the noose that's kept me hanging about. I keep looking at the sky because it's getting me high. Forget the hearse because I'll never die. Maybe for the first time ever, you've heard about Jesus and it actually makes sense. The story goes that Jesus came to this earth to fulfill a debt that we had in our lives that we could not pay to God. And that was sin. All of us sinned throughout our lives and Jesus came to pay for it. That is why he went to the cross. That is why he died. He lived a perfect life with no sin. He could not die unless he carried someone else's sin. And as the Son of God, the perfect sacrifice, he carried all sin to the cross and paid for it. So does that mean that everyone's forgiven? Yeah, but only if we accept that gift. You can give me a gift. You can give me a gift and you can say, I bought you this. It's awesome. I don't have to open it, do I? That's what Jesus did for all of us when he died on the cross. The most important thing that you need to think about in regards to remembrance is this. You need Jesus to remember you. It says this in Luke 23, 39 through 43. This is as Jesus was hanging on the cross. It says, one of the criminals hanging beside him scoffed, so you're the Messiah, are you? Well, prove it by saving yourself and us too while you're at it. But the other criminal protested, don't you fear God even when you have been sentenced to die? We deserve to die for our crimes, but this man hasn't done anything wrong. Then he said, Jesus, remember me when you come into your heaven, into your kingdom, excuse me. And Jesus replied, I assure you today, you will be with me in paradise. That's all you need to do. Talk about what faith is, what salvation is. It's asking Jesus, remember me. Remember me, I accept your gift. Remember me in heaven. Someday that last page is going to come, and when I go, remember my name. Lean over to your father and say, no. God, he's with me. She's with me. We've talked. They're cool. Let him in. Have you accepted Jesus' gift for you? 1 Thessalonians 4:13-14. It says this, and now, dear brothers and sisters, we want you to know what will happen to the believers who have died so that you will not grieve like people who have no hope. For since we believe that Jesus died and was raised to life again, we also believe that when Jesus returns, God will bring back with him the believers who have died. We're all moving towards this last page, and here's why it's so important. Because if you have a relationship with Jesus, that last page doesn't look so sad. It doesn't look so scary. There's a story that has been told by historians, people sharing that when the bubonic plague came through, the black plague that wiped out, it was like over 50% of the population at the time, that when they would go through and they would have the carts to collect the dead that people would carry out, they said that people commented, the dead collectors, they said, Christians are different than everyone else. And they said, why? And they said, well, everyone carries out their dead about the same way, but he says, the Christians, he says, they carry their dead as if in celebration. As if in celebration, they lay their mom or their husband or their child on the cart. Not in sadness. Because they know that that person is now in eternity in heaven in comfort and that they'll see them again. Our life looks different if we have a relationship with Jesus. Our perspective looks different. What will you be remembered for? Maybe today you kind of have a second chance. You thought about this before. You've experienced it before. Or maybe you've never done anything. And today is the day that God's getting a hold of your heart. Did you know that Bon Scott, in 1974, right before he joined the band, got insanely drunk, got on his motorcycle, got into an accident, and was in a coma for 3 days? He came out of a 3-day coma, almost miraculously, and went right back to his old lifestyle that led to his death. When you're given a second chance, use it. Not for the same purpose. Use it for something better. Don't throw it away. Bow your heads at me just for 1 second. And just as we find applications this day, I hope that this challenges you and you walk away with maybe a different mindset of what has to happen out of today. And just 2 quick things. One, man, I just always feel led, if I can, to offer this to anybody. If there's anyone who says, Cameron, I have no relationship with Jesus, or maybe you did a long time ago and you've walked so far away, I mean, you have no connection with him anymore, and you say, man, I need Jesus in my life again. I need to take that step of faith. And if that's you, what I want to do is just give you an opportunity to respond in a small way. And here's what it is. In just a second, I'm going to count to three. And when I get to three, I just want you to raise your hand above your head, okay? No one else is looking around. You close your eyes. Give everyone the respect. This is about you and God. And I just want to see your hand, and I want to pray for you. I want to join in a prayer with you and believe that God can change your life today. That from today, you can start writing new pages that make differences so that last chapter looks completely different. If it's you, right now you can feel it. You know it's you in your heart. You can feel that sped up feeling in your chest. You can feel that God is touching your shoulder right now, telling you it's you. And if it's you, just raise your hand. 1, 2, don't miss it. 3, raise your hand if it's you. Raise your hand. I see your hand over here, ma'am. Yeah, I see your hand. Anybody else today just says, yeah, it's me, if it's you. And let's just join in with these two here. Let's pray together, just together to join with these. Say, Lord Jesus, I'm sorry for my sin. Thank you for dying in my place. I make you the Lord of my life. Remember me in heaven. In Jesus' name. And just keep your eyes closed for a second, just as a response to this. if you just want to respond, and this is just because I want to pray for you guys that God can do something miraculous out of today. If you say, listen, maybe I've never stopped and thought about what I want to be remembered for, but when you said that, all of a sudden I realized I don't think I'm going to be remembered for what I want to be remembered for. The thing I would wish people are going to say about me, I'm not sure I've written enough chapters that actually fall into that category. Whether it's in your relationships, maybe it's in your faith. Maybe you realize, I have not done much in my faith. I realize my chapters, man, they are weak and they are not leading up to something where people are really going to write a great chapter in remembrance of me. And that's you and say, listen, I just want to ask God, can you help me? Can you give me the courage to step forward? Can you help me write these chapters? Can you help direct my attention so that I will be remembered for what I want to be remembered for? If it's you, real quick, just raise your hand with me. 1, 2, 3, raise your hand. I want to pray for you. Anyone, hands up who wants to do it, just go ahead, raise your hand. Don't be scared if it's you. Raise your hand. God, I pray for each person who has their hand raised today that you would interact with their lives today, that you would change something in them. You would help give them strength to be able to accomplish what it is you're challenging in their heart right now. That as they look at themselves and realize, I'm not really living the life I want to. I'm not writing chapters that lead up to how I want to be remembered. That you would give them a confidence to be able to realize what they need to do. You would show them that end picture of their life and you would draw the line back. They'd see, here's what I need to do. And you would give them the courage to be able to do it starting today. Maybe today they're going to do something different in their heart. Today they're going to do something different in their faith. Maybe they're going to say, I'm going to start serving, or I'm going to start helping, or I'm going to start giving, or I'm going to start being kind, or I'm going to start telling people about my faith for the first time ever. Maybe it's in their families that they're going to start being kind to those around them. They're going to start actually showing the love they have for those people that you've blessed them with in their life. Whatever it is, Jesus, that you're going to be the one who gives them strength right now to accomplish it. And we just praise you because we know that you're good and we know that you will do this. It's in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Guys, thank you so much. Think about it. What will you be remembered for? Let's finish out today by spending a few minutes in worship just to be able to connect with God. Maybe there's some application you need to do in this time as well, too. And we'll finish up with a couple announcements that we get done. Be here next week. Be here next week.